number 19-1122, Intellectual Ventures LLC versus Trend Micro Incorporated, Mr. Lahan.
Good morning, and may it please the court. This was not an exceptional case under the statute, and the conduct at issue does not justify awarding fees under Section 288. Moreover, the district court erroneously awarded fees unrelated to the conduct that it found exceptional. So what's the conduct at issue here? It really comes down to a portion of an argument in opposition to Trend Micro's motion to modify the construction of one term from one of three asserted patents. Trend Micro sought to add the word bulk to the construction of Claim 9 of the 050 patent, as well as the word frequency to all three constructions. And if you note the chart on page 8 of our opening brief, you will see the differences in the constructions. Now, Trend Micro's motion ostensibly was made in response to certain testimony from IV's technical expert, Dr. McDaniel, during trial against a separate defendant, Symantec. The expert testified in accordance with the district court's two-year-old construction that bulk wasn't within the scope of Claim 9. He was asked whether that testimony reflected a change of opinion, and he said yes. Now, IV opposed Trend Micro's motion to modify the construction. We argued that the motion was untimely. We argued that there was no O2 micro issue. We also argued in a more traditional claim construction argument that the intrinsic evidence didn't support the modified construction. But we did also argue that the expert, who wasn't some seasoned testifier, he was a college professor, didn't flip-flop. We acknowledged his trial testimony and argued how his opinions at trial were consistent with the pretrial record. You can see that in our briefing at Appendix 672 to 677, as well as during the hearing, for example, at 807 through 808.
Okay, and the district court found that argument was untenable. Is that wrong?
I think that is wrong. I think the argument was not untenable. We cited the record. We cited the expert's prior deposition testimony. We cited his expert reports. The argument made in that part of the argument was based on the record evidence and was intended to show that, contrary to the argument, this wasn't some significant deviation from the record that prejudiced Trend Micro and cast it into a frenzy of additional work before its trial.
Are you familiar with the Rembrandt case from this court?
Yes, Your Honor.
So my question is, let's say that I think it's up to the discretion of the district court to be able to look at a particular amount, this particular portion of the case, and determine whether the case is exceptional or not. Why can't the district court do that and allocate under Rembrandt?
Well, I think there's two problems. I think, number one, this is the wrong 285 is the wrong mechanism for this case. 285 was not intended to be used to redress a single isolated act. That's not what the statute says. The statute does not talk about conduct or acts or violations.
You can't award fees under 285 unless you find the case overall is exceptional?
No, Your Honor. I think under 285, there has to be a pattern of misconduct or misbehavior. There has to be a pattern or a course of conduct over some portion of the proceedings.
Is that a little inconsistent with Rembrandt?
I'm sorry.
Isn't that a little inconsistent with Rembrandt? In Rembrandt, the case was found to be exceptional for particular conduct, not a pattern of conduct, for particular conduct. And then this court said, first, you find the case exceptional. In the second analysis, you look at the amount of attorney fees to be awarded, and there has to be some connection between the amount of fees awarded and the conduct that is found exceptional. So there's nothing in Rembrandt about a pattern of bad behavior.
I think that this court's, I think the Supreme Court's instruction in Octane Fitness and Highmark contemplate this pattern idea. But there has to be more than just one act. And it has to be an act that is arguably questionable, in bad faith, vexatious. And it can't be simply defending your expert or trying to rehabilitate a witness.
Didn't the Supreme Court also say at the same time that we're not supposed to get into these kinds of disputes? It's really up to the discretion of the district court, which is more familiar with the case, for the district court to determine whether this case stands out compared to others.
The court did say that, and the court said that the reason why we defer to the district court is because the court has lived with the case for a prolonged period of time, and you have to look at the litigation position as the over time. This case doesn't stand apart because of some portion of an argument. This case stands apart because the district court awarded fees under Section 285 despite express findings that, quote, it would be wrong to say that Ivy's case was objectively unreasonable. Court found that Ivy's case overall was not exceptional, and that Ivy did not deliberately plan and execute a reversal of position, and there was no ill motivation on Ivy's part. This is a unique situation where the court lived with the case for 4.5, 5 years, and as the court said, there's a bunch of litigation, and Ivy prevailed over on a majority of it, including at trial against Symantec. And what's also important is that there was no finding or even argument that continued prosecution after the court granted the motion to modify was somehow vexatious or bad faith or unreasonable. I think faulting Ivy for making a good faith record-supported argument misapplies Section 285 legally and factually. And further to your point, Your Honor.
Suppose it's not a good faith record-supported argument.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Suppose it's not a good faith record-supported argument.
I disagree with that hypothetical, but if, assuming that hypothetical, if it's not a good faith argument, if it's an argument that wasn't supported by the record as it was, if it wasn't an argument that was permitted under the rules, i.e. to rehabilitate a witness, I still don't think you get to 285.
Didn't the district court also say, though, that ill motivation had not been proven, not conclusively? Right.
That's what the district court said. It had not been proved, but the district court explicitly found no overall exceptional case, that the case was objectively was not objectively unreasonable, and very importantly, that it was not a deliberate plan or execution of a reversal of position. This court's decisions as to what constitutes sufficient grounds for exceptional case and this idea that it should be a pattern, we see in the SFA Systems case. We see it, which cited the EonNet case. In that case, the patentee destroyed documents, lodged misleading extrinsic evidence, acted in bad faith, took unsupportable positions, and demonstrated, quote, a lack of regard for the judicial system. The court in SFA cited MarTech, finding that fees were justified because the patentee initiated a frivolous lawsuit, misrepresented the law and the constructions adopted by the court, and relied on expert testimony that, quote, failed to even meet minimal standards of reliability. The court cited Monolithic, holding that fees were warranted based on an overall vexatious litigation strategy and numerous instances of litigation misconduct. There's no pattern by IV. The district court did not find one. To the contrary, the district court went out of its way to rest its fees award on a single act. And again, a single act can transform, I think, a case into an exceptional case, but it still implicates a pattern or a course of conduct after that act. It could be a claim construction that renders an invalidity position or an infringement position untenable, or some fact that dooms a patent's validity. In this case, as I said, the claim construction didn't change anything. It didn't beget a new non-infringement position for Trend Micro. It didn't kill the patent.
What about some of the cases that are cited? There's a couple of non-precedential cases from this court that are cited, I believe, in the red brief at pages 28 and 29, like the total containment case and the unified messaging case. Those cases are non-precedential, but in those cases, as I read them, those were circumstances where a district court had said the case was exceptional because of one main event. And
For example, in unified messaging, there was the court focused on a failure to join a party, a necessary party. And the court said that the court can only infer that the litigation strategy set out above motivated UMS's lack of candor and transparency. So with respect to unified messaging, I think the court identified, as I said, a single act and a failure to join, and that was representative of a larger overall vexatious strategy. In fact, and what I quoted to you is in that case at, find the pin site, Your Honor, star 6. So that's the unified message case. So I think in unified messaging, there is that idea or that element of a strategy that was precipitated by an event. In the total containment case, the court held that fees were warranted in part because, quote, the district court found that the EPI persisted in its allegation of misconduct by TCI even after it learned that TCI had presented the allegedly withheld information to the PTO. This was an equitable conduct type of argument. And so, for example, in the total containment, the fact that EPI persisted in claiming this inequitable conduct theory, in pursuing inequitable conduct theory, despite the fact that TCI had presented the allegedly withheld information to the PTO, and after the PTO had stated that it would not consider that information in reexamination proceedings, again, it's an event that continued prosecution, that is a course of conduct or a pattern of conduct, and not a single act. So this case is unique. I think this court's decision in Checkpoint Systems provides the best blueprint for reversal. In that case, this court reversed the award of fees because the record didn't show any abuse or harassment. There was no allegation of falsity or fraud or bad faith, and the charge of infringement was reasonable. The BIACS case is also instructive. In that case, the court, Your Honors were on the panel in that case, reversed the fees award. District court misinterpreted the argument and the infringement position, and that the claim construction did not foreclose the patentee's infringement case. Also earlier this year, there's the A10 case in which the court affirmed the denial of fees despite a weak lost profits theory and the disproportionate aspects between damages and litigation costs. Again, the conduct at issue here is the argument in response to a motion to modify a claim construction 2.5 years after the claim construction order, the original claim construction order issued. That type of argument, again, based on the record, based on the expert's prior testimony, that's not the type of argument, that's not the stuff of 285.
You're well into the rebuttal time, you want to say?
I will reserve the remainder for rebuttal. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Tchaikovsky.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, Yar Tchaikovsky, on behalf of Trend Micro. Your Honor, we just heard an argument that I guess repeatedly we heard before the district court and now in the Federal Circuit in briefing and in hearings that focuses on a change in an expert's testimony. What the district court found was the exceptional case and caused this to be an exceptional case was not the Rule 26 finding.
He didn't really, did he find an exceptional case? I
mean, yeah.
He said, this is something I'm concerned about.
Yeah.
He said, under the totality of circumstances, the case as a whole is not exceptional. But I find this conduct here, surrounding this circumstance, exceptional.
He found the case to be exceptional.
Where
he
does
didn't
he
find
say the case is exceptional?
So I'll find that, Your Honor, in a moment. I'll find that, Your Honor. I'll get back to that. But beyond saying the case exceptional, there's nothing in this 285 that says the entire case must be exceptional. Moreover, citing going with Rembrandt, we were all here, actually, when we argued the merits case decision on 101 in this case. What was that? Probably 2-3 years ago. On the same day, this panel, although Judge Toronto now sitting instead of Judge Mayer, heard the Digital Register of Texas versus Adobe Systems case. In that case, there were many instances, if you could look at the district court's opinion from the Northern District of California, of arguments of what was exceptional. And in fact, the district court declined to find most of those items to be either leading to attorney's fees or exceptionality. In fact, the only instances the court found led the case to be exceptional was the changing testimony of two witnesses during the course of trial, where one witness testified that there was a different version of a document, and another witness testified that he didn't recognize the document and would change his trial testimony. The district court in that case affirmed by this court, I believe it was a Rule 36 slip opinion, was that that case was exceptional, fees were granted, despite the fact that other aspects of the case, and not the entirety of the case, but those acts that occurred in trial made the case exceptional. And in fact, those were limited, isolated acts, which is not what we have actually here. We actually have the repeated, and in fact, a lack of focus of what we just heard for counsel from Intellectual Ventures is the focus is on their counsel actually denying what transpired at trial and then continuing the denial at the fee hearing. That's the focus of the district court and of Judge Stark, is the repeated efforts throughout the case to actually deny that this effort happened. And unified messaging that was just described, the other case, which was Judge Lefkoe from the Northern District of Illinois, that was my case, argued to this court on appeal. In that case, this court actually found that the one act relating to not adding standing, not adding a party, was actually lacking candor and transparency.
Coming back to Judge Stull's question.
Yes.
My question was specifically setting aside whether I recognize, of course, that there can be certain portions of the case that the district court looks at and says, this stands out, makes the case exceptional. My concern is that Judge Stark never said, this case is exceptional. He said, I look at the totality, and this case is not exceptional. The totality of the case is not exceptional. So I'm trying to get you to help me
to understand.
You know, you could say, hey, he ruled from the bench. There's lots of things you could say here.
Yeah, so. Appendix 55, Your Honor. Uh-huh. After hearing the argument, we were there all day. A counsel for Ivy argued all day. I argued all day. The order was from the bench after a recess.
Okay.
The order exists.
You're looking at page A55. Where would you draw?
As I noted, in this case, the burden.
Loud. Just so you know, you don't have to be quite so loud. Okay.
Okay, I apologize. The burden is on Trend Micro.
Line 18.
Correct. Sorry, Your Honor. To show by a preponderance of evidence under the totality of circumstances that the case is exceptional. Having considered the arguments both before today, having lived with the case for a long time, and having heard the lengthy arguments today and reviewed the materials, I find that Trend Micro has met its burden in granting the motion. That's the court saying the case is exceptional. I don't know how to read that any other way, but I found the case exceptional. Yes, the court.
You really should be quieter, okay?
I apologize, Your Honor.
We don't like to be yelled at.
So I apologize, but that was the court's finding at the outset of his opinion that the case was exceptional.
And then I think at the beginning of the fees amount order, there's a description of this page, this earlier fees entitlement order as declaring the case exceptional. But nevertheless, I think that the substance of the concern is, does 285 really allow fees to be awarded for particular conduct, whether it's the submission of a particular position or other conduct, that a judge, district court, finds exceptional, even if, as a whole, the case cannot be viewed as exceptional? Is there some important difference in the statute between those two things?
I think what Octane and Highmark did in combination was to allow district courts the discretion to find cases exceptional as opposed to the rigid standard applied in Brooks Furniture that was overturned by the Supreme Court. And in considering it, I mean, footnote 6 from Octane is very exemplary and said, in determining award of fees under a similar provision, district courts can consider a non-exclusive list of factors, including frivolousness, motivation, objective unreasonableness, and the need in particular circumstances to advance consideration of compensation and deterrence. And that's exactly what the Supreme Court gave district courts the power to do, is when certain things occur to have compensation and deterrence and therefore compensation, so that certain acts don't transpire again. And here we don't even have one act, as this court...
Excuse me, unless, under two for 285 purposes, unless the same equally bad conduct was engaged in by the prevailing party.
I don't disagree that the totality of circumstances...
Isn't that a strange way to view 285, right? 285, if 285 is about, let's just call them isolated bad acts, why would that not equally apply to isolated bad acts of the prevailing party?
I wouldn't say 285 is about isolated bad acts. You definitely have to look at the totality of circumstances, but it does include it. And looking at the totality of circumstances, coming to a conclusion. This court has, in many other cases, looked at the totality of circumstances, come to one conclusion, come to another conclusion. As I mentioned, I think Rembrandt, I think Digital Register of Texas versus Adobe, I think UMS are examples where when you look at the totality, exceptional case was found, and it was largely based on one act. Where here, we actually don't have one act. If you look at appendix 55, also in the judge's order, lines 9 through 17, right, allows the court where the prevailing party shows by preponderance evidence that the case is exceptional. The exceptional standard is assessed under the totality of circumstances and requires the court to consider, among other things, a non-existent list of factors where their case stands out and substantive strength. And what the court, in fact, did through here is the court considered equitable factors. If we go through the court's decision, the court on A57 said he found that the relief should be granted. I do find those acts are what occurred, meaning specifically the expert witness, late, cross-examination at trial, Rule 36. That's A57. However, that's... again, the focus of IV. What the court then went on to say, besides disclosing this new opinion, did IV later oppose all relief based on the admitted late disclosures of new expert opinion? That includes at the motion for clarification in April 2015. That includes at the fee hearing in August of 2017, a denial. In fact, I would say not telling the truth, disbelief, going to what Your Honor said on counsel came up here, that actually the truth was not being told by counsel for Intellectual Ventures about what transpired in the courtroom. And the answer is yes. And it's fair to consider all of that under the totality of circumstances. And does all that stand out from other cases, from all other portions of the case, looking at all the cases, from a district court that right now hears more patent cases than any other in the U.S., back then the second most in the United States, and it says, does it stand out in terms of the strength of the position Ivy was advocating or the manner in which Ivy was litigating? The answer to that is yes, with respect to the collection of circumstances regarding this. And I considered equity. The court considered equity at their request, as the court said. And the court considered trends litigation misconduct on A59 and said that doesn't mitigate and change my circumstances. And A60 was the equitable component to a 285 analysis. So, I mean, I'm not sure that you could get a more reasoned opinion under the Octane Highmark standards that looked at all the factors of the majority of a case that now has gone on for a decade. At the time, the court had 7 years of living through this case and said all these acts.
Yeah, but I guess the question is whether the court has to find that a single act is so significant that it makes the case overall exceptional. Or can the court find that the case is not overall exceptional, but partly exceptional and award fees under 285?
The court found the case to be exceptional. The court's not saying, not doing what?
Hang on for a second. At JA57, he says, I considered whether the case overall is exceptional. I find it was not.
And that's every argument from beginning to end, every non-infringement argument, et cetera. That's not what's required. Again, not required
So you're answering Judge Dyke's question with this information I just gave you. So that's what I want.
Right. Not all aspects of the case need to be frivolous, objectively. That'd be the Brooks Furniture standard.
That's not the question. The question is, does the individual event need to be so significant that it renders the case overall exceptional? Or is it permissible under the statute to say, no, the case overall is not exceptional, but part of it is?
The issue is it's not an individual event, Your Honor. That's where the disagreement is, or strictly.
All right, well, this cluster of events related to this testimony and the attempt to defend it.
It's not just that. And I apologize if our briefing didn't do as good of a job.
No, but
this.
You're not answering the question. The question is, does the event or cluster of events have to be so significant that it renders the case overall exceptional, or is it sufficient that it renders it in part exceptional?
The court has to find the case to be exceptional, one that stands out from others as
optimal. Overall case?
I don't think you have to say the entirety of the case is exceptional. Every aspect of the case is exceptional. And the court's issue here was, again, if we look at A610 through A611, in the claim construction tutorial, they said that bulk is part of this claim construction. That's why the court said, I can't believe this is happening to me. At A1478, in the claim construction briefing, bulk is part of the claim construction. At A1524, the Markman hearing, bulk is part of the claim construction. So both the court and Trend Micro and McDaniel's expert report and McDaniel's deposition, bulk is part of the claim construction. So throughout the case, actually through the case, all of the substance of the case, not one isolated act, the court and Trend Micro were in the position of bulk is part of this claim construction. Not until the experts changed opinion at trial in the beginning of 2015 was there all of a sudden an aha moment. Bulk is not part of Claim 9. And then after that aha moment, which may be addressed by Rule 26 and a clarification of the claim construction, there was Ivy's counsel saying, hey, that was a mistake. That trial testimony was an error in trying. And that's where Judge Stark, in that moment, said, that's not true. He changed his opinion. That same thing was carried forward at the fee hearing, that there was now an error in the deposition.
And what was the scope of the work for which fees were awarded here?
The scope of the work, we cabined the fees to the acts that were intentionally, that were cabined to, as a result, the change in the opinion of the testimony.
Starting from the testimony that the judge found was a change.
That's correct, sir.
Not any of the earlier submissions.
That's correct, Your Honor. Sorry, at that point in time going forward, that's correct. And then the court allowed fees, including up to the fee briefing, additionally. I think going back to Judge Dyke, you're answering your question. The panel here largely was sitting through Digital Register of Texas. I think there can be certain acts. I don't think this case is a case of certain acts. I think it's a case of a position that was taken throughout the case. So it's not like an isolated act. It's a position throughout the case. There were other arguments, for example, the 101, which we were up here back and forth, which was winners and losers. But just because there are other aspects of a case that are winners and losers does not mean that a case is not exceptional. Digital Register of Texas, okay, UMS, or Rembrandt.
Mr. Chekhovsky, we're correct.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Mr. Lahan.
Yes, as the court recognized, Judge Stark did not find the entire case exceptional. And that's Appendix 57.
He doesn't have to find that the entire case is exceptional, but maybe he has to find that the case is exceptional because some aspect of it is so significant that it renders the thing overall exceptional.
And I don't think he found that here. I don't think that he found that this argument was so significant that it rendered the case overall exceptional. I don't think that's what he found. I think that he didn't like the argument because he goes back to it. We heard argument that it was a pattern. It was from the beginning of the case and the construction of bulk from 2012 and on and through trial. That's not what Judge Stark hung his argument on or his ruling on. And you see that in the record. You see that at 24 and 25 of the appendix, where he asks the question about this particular argument. he has a concern. Again, I can see that this is at 24 of the record, lines 24. I can see that argument if I were to rule they prevailed on 285 just because of the violation of Rule 26. But here it really was very notably followed up in the course of its clarification by Ms. Taylor trying to persuade me that I should not accept what your own witness said under oath in front of me. Then at the appendix at 32 and 33, he goes back to that issue. Appendix 41, he goes back to that issue. And that is the single act. It is not a pattern. It is not a course of conduct. It is not a litigation strategy. It's one act trying to explain to the court that its expert had not deviated from the prior record. The testimony was mistaken. There was argument that we denied the testimony. That's incorrect. Page 807 to 808 of the record.
Okay, Mr. Lahan, thank you. We're out of time. Thank both counsel. The case is submitted. And that concludes our session for this morning.
All right.